There's an event on at the moment, it's called Cisco Connect 2018, which probably didn't mean a lot to most of you, but what I want to remember is that Cisco is the biggest networking company in the world, and Michelle Dennedy is their chief privacy officer. And Michelle joins me now. Good morning to you.
Good morning, sir. How are you?
Good, good, good. Oh, sir, I love that. You can call me Mark, though. Tell me, why are you into privacy? What took you down this route?
You know, it's an interesting thing. I fell into it. I was an intellectual property lawyer doing patents. And along came a CEO who said, you have zero privacy, get over it. And, you know, being a girl with a bit of fight, I said, No, we're going to change that story, and we're going to fight for our privacy rights, and we're going to show that same company and many others that it's good for business too. And I've been doing that for about 25 years now.
Because that is the thing. I mean, sometimes you think, you know, nothing is private. You might as well just give up. We live into a world where it seems that, you know, we're constantly reading about things that materials hacked into or information given away, when you think it's been private. Is it possible, Michelle, to have privacy when it comes to your data?
So I'm going to make a quick analogy and say it's like donuts, Mark. I love donuts. And if I ate donuts all day, I probably wouldn't live a very long life. So is it possible to live a long and healthy life and still have, you know, sharing of delicious fruits and treats? Yes. In the same way, it's very possible to have open communication when you want it and to have controlled and confidential conversations when you need it. We all need a space to collect our thoughts and to be creative and to have a little break from the crowd. And I think it's not only possible, I think it's necessary for every civil society.
But how do we achieve it?
So I have a small bias here. I've actually written a book called The Privacy Engineer's Manifesto.
Oh.
And we really talk about how you break it down and you build it. We build it the same way we build everything else. We have architectural standards. We have builders that are trained to do it. And piece by piece, we take apart the pieces that allow you to have controlled and confidential conversations the way you want to have it, the way you want to control it. And those become our requirements for how we build our next data-driven economy.
But those same engineers who build it, Michelle, surely can't they then find a way to unpick it, to get around it, to circumvent it?
How would we have any fun if we didn't have those creative frictions in our market? Of course they can. Just like your car can break down, I'm going to build a better one next time. Just like you try something and maybe it doesn't fit the first time and we change the way we do business and we alter and we flex and we grow. It's as flexible and interesting and possible as somehow getting along on this crazy planet with the rest of humanity.
You know, there'll be a lot of people will be listening. They'll be thinking, oh, yeah, you know, I can sort of take precautions myself. The thing I really worry about is my kids and their lives are now spent online. How do we ensure that they are safe?
It's such a good question. And safety and privacy are slightly two different topics. They're interleaved. So I think safety is a really important thing that parents, even who are not digital natives, we call them, people surrounded by technology by birth, we have judgment that we can share with our children. But I've got two teenage daughters. I know the temptations. And so it's about talking about what are those long-term things? I can bring that to the table. And then I can also understand, and here's the note of hope for all the parents out there. Yes, they want to take pictures of their lunch every day. And the improbable amount of selfies is just an insane thing to me as an older person. But at the same time, you start to watch them and listen to them and what they care about. They want their grandmother to see one view of them. They want to see their boyfriend and girlfriend to see a different view. They want their closest friends to see maybe even a more vulnerable view. And so the challenge for parents is to understand ethics and values and work with them at a very young age to understand. Check their controls online. Ask questions of vendors when you don't see them present. And then continue to have that dialogue as you would anything, any dialogue about money or values or morals. Keep that dialogue open with your kids, and it will go a long way to protect them from the truly scary things that can make them unsafe online.
So the best way to keep us safe in terms of the advancing technology is back to good old-fashioned talking.
You bet. You bet. Be communicative with your kids. Ask your kids who their friends are, even the ones online. With my younger daughter, who's only 12, we have a rule. If she can't name that person and how they, she knows that individual, they cannot be on her social. My older daughter is about to go off to college. She has a much wider range of people she's never met who are on forums and interest things that she's into poetry, and so she'll meet people online. We have a rule that you don't meet anyone that you met online, but she does have a dialogue with them. And so by peeling it off, age-appropriate dialogue, ongoing, looking at those controls, questioning these companies, insisting and sometimes even outing people on platforms like Twitter and other social media and saying, hey, what's going on with this? Why can't I have a control like that? Parents can take back a lot of power.
The other big issue, I suppose, when we've seen this, like, say, look with Facebook and Cambridge Analytica and that sort of sense that we are unwittingly, our privacy is being invaded all the time, that the people are helping themselves to stuff that is ours and you know, we can't trust anyone, we can't trust any companies, especially we can't trust technology.
Yeah, I think it's such a good point, and I think we are in such an early stage in really the commercialization of data. I think in the early days, we were starting to see people buying and selling, and the only way they could possibly make money was by selling our information in secret. I think those days are coming to an end. We're seeing law schemas like the General Data Protection Regulation, or GDPR, in Europe coming out with a 4% global turnover fine against companies that abuse your personal data. I think we're seeing reflections from all across the globe with revisions and updating of everyone's data privacy laws to reflect that, really, the groundswell of concern and the lack of trust. It will impede our economies if we cannot trust digital services.
Hey, look, one issue that's come up here, and I wonder whether you can shine some light on it, and this is the whole move towards digital voting. We're talking about engaging young people in the political process and voting, and a lot of it, because of the fact that one thing they are wedded to is technology. Is it possible to create a safe, reliable, unhackable online voting system?
So I will break down. Those are various requirements. Unhackable is almost like saying perfect. I don't believe that there is such a thing as unhackable, because all this technology we're creating is made by humans and has human failings. So we can have lots of stuff. So I'm not expecting perfect. Can we have something that we can audit and test and trust? I think we possibly can, but I think the nervousness and the precaution taken, and sometimes even the backup with old-fashioned paper, is important, because the solidarity and integrity of the vote is the underpinning of our democracies. And so taking it even more seriously than our credit data and our monetary data, which is also, of course, of, you know, personal importance to each of us individually, I think the focus and the concern around voting is of dire consequence. And I agree with really, really focusing hard on security.
Do you think we will get there eventually?
Yes, I do. I do. I think we're going to get more attuned to having social identities that are flexible to our context. Sometimes I'm a business professional. Sometimes I'm chatting on a radio show. Sometimes I'm acting as a voter and enacting the sacred kind of trust in as a voter. And I think each of those things have a different level of identity management and security that have to be driven. And I think that the push for knowing who's voting, knowing that it's not fraudulent, trusting in the civil process will drive that determination to get to a digital vote eventually.